Welcome back to the Garage Hockey Podcast. I'm Felix Sicard, joined as always by my fantastic co-hosts, Nick and Joe Berger. Guys, it's good to be back in the studio. I gotta say, I'm pumped for this episode.
I am too. I'm also really pumped that your description for your co-host just keeps getting ramped up.
Well, I gotta play you guys up, right? We can only be our biggest cheerleaders, right?
That's true. No one else will root for us if we're not rooting for ourselves.
Yes. Yeah, I'm pumped for this episode. But the funny thing is, there really isn't, like, in terms of hockey, there isn't that much to be pumped about. I'll give you a good reason. We're almost at the end of these dreaded pre-tournament games.
Yes.
So as far as they were for the first couple games, they sort of died down a little bit.
But we have gotten some good games, and one game I really want to discuss, because I think it was, honestly, one of the better hockey games I think I've ever watched, was Canada-Russia. Played a couple days ago. We're recording on a Thursday night. By the way, a chilly Thursday night.
It is kind of chilly.
I'm wearing pants. I usually wear shorts when we record.
I'm wearing a sweatshirt.
Like, it's getting colder. Anyway.
The garage is actually comfortable now, so.
Yeah, that's true. Good. We're not sweating.
It's good.
Yeah, so this pod will probably be up Friday morning. But so I watched this game, which took place, I guess, on Tuesday. And I gotta say, it was a fantastic game. I think Canada's really starting to look, I don't want to say like a finished product, but they look scary.
They do. This one is still sitting on my DVR because I haven't really had a chance to watch it yet, but I saw the first 5 minutes, and it looks like it was a very exciting game.
Canada-Russia.
Joe, you watched it, right?
Canada-Russia.
Yeah, I saw most of it. There were parts in the second that I missed.
What are your takeaways?
My biggest takeaway was that Russia looked like the second best team in the tournament.
Really?
Which is kind of a bold thing to say.
Well, tell us why.
Well, it was very apparent that the chemistry was there. And from your point, the last pod, about how you get at the World Tournament, the one they do at the end of every season.
The World Championship.
Yeah, the World Championship. How all the Russian players tend to play a lot together.
Yeah.
Because for whatever reason, their teams aren't, they don't make a deep run in the playoffs.
Ovechkin.
Yeah, so
Tarasenko.
The chemistry, I suppose, from that angle, really shouldn't be that surprising. You know, like, they should be the team that played the most together. And so the fact that they look good now, you know, again, probably not too surprising.
Yeah, I thought the Russians looked like a team that was determined. Mm-hmm. I know that's not the most, like, that's a bit of a buzzword, but I really got this impression that they were getting after it in this game. And, you know, I think my fears about their blue line were sort of validated.
That Tavares goal.
Yeah, there were some...
Well, I mean, even the Getzlaf goal, like a breakaway in overtime.
That looked like a line change, though.
It was a platoon change. Yeah, their blue line is still shaky. I didn't know Markov was playing, but the fact that they have Andrei Markov and Alexei Yemelin on the same pairing concerns me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was thinking
Who's taking care of whom?
Exactly. As I was watching the game, I was like, you know, those are both guys that kind of need a partner to complement them, to sort of insulate them, and neither can do that for the other. So that's a bit of a brutal pairing, which sucks because I think both players have things to offer, like in a vacuum. They just don't really work well together.
Mm.
But I really liked what I saw from Russia, and I think a lot of it... And look, again, I think the way we analyze this tournament has to be a little different than the way we would view an 82-game season.
Yeah.
Look, for me, I can only speak for myself from this, but like when I watch games in an NHL season, which I do a lot of, I tend to look at long-term trends. I think, okay, well, yeah, sure, this team won tonight, but, you know, I don't like the process. You know, I'm more about process over results in an NHL season because ultimately the teams that play the best way tend to win in the end. It's not so much about standings or who wins the most games. But in a short tournament like this, it's a little different. It's just like, can this team get it done? Like, do they have things I like enough to get them a few games?
Mm.
And I think that with Russia, look, they certainly have that. My only concern, really, one of my biggest concerns was their goaltending. I didn't know what they were going to get from Varlamov, Bobrovsky, and Vasilevskiy. I thought it was a position of strength, but Bobrovsky looked great.
He did.
Like, I mean, he looked fantastic. The saves he was making were just A-plus saves.
I mean, at the very beginning of the game, you know, Steve Levy said that You know, you look at the lineups and it should be a high scoring affair, and it was 3-2.
Yeah, which is a good score.
Yeah, it's a good score. Obviously, you know, the if this is NHL regular season, they're looking for a higher score. But, you know, for, you know, Russia, Canada, especially with Russia's blue line, you would expect a few more goals, and it was tight.
Yeah. No, and honestly, that it was such a fantastic game to watch because there was everything you'd want in a hockey game. There were big hits. There were goals.
Great. Ovechkin flattened, I think, Couture in the first period.
Oh, he did. And even Doughty got a solid check on
Ovechkin.
On Ovechkin. It wasn't like...
Ovechkin rolled off of it.
Ovechkin rolled off of it, but it stopped him. Like, separated him from the puck, which is the most important thing about a body check.
It is a definition of a hit.
But I was watching the game, and I was just like... And I already knew the result. And, you know, thanks to Twitter, like, I had seen all the goals and all the GIFs.
The GIFs, yeah.
But I was still yelling at my TV. I was just like, this is so much fun. Like, I miss this feeling of watching hockey and, you know, just being amazed at the talent of these players.
Yeah, man. I might watch it tonight while I edit.
I honestly, anyone who's listening to this podcast, if you can, I'm sure it's somewhere on YouTube or on the internet, watch this game because it's just, it's fun.
It was the most fun I've had watching a game so far of the preliminaries.
Was it? Because we've talked about the physicality, but was it a chippy game?
Not really, no.
No, it was just, like, here's the thing. It was just a competitive game.
Yeah.
Okay.
Both teams wanted it. And the funny thing is, like, it was in Pittsburgh, so yeah. Neither team was the home team. Mm. But there was the factor of it's Sid versus Gino.
And they took the opening faceoff.
Yeah, which I thought was great. Like, that was a cool little element. But the whole thing just had all the theater, you know? And I thought, I don't know, for Russia to look that good against Canada, and look, like, I'm not going to pretend that they outplayed Canada. For the most of the game, Canada looked better. Like, Canada was controlling play better. But look, Russia has the talent to get those goals. Yep. And if their goaltenders can keep it up, there's no reason why they can't go further in this tournament.
And until Canada got their second goal in the third period, that third period was largely...
It was Russia.
Yeah.
Russia
and Canada kept taking penalties, but...
But again, and like, I think that sort of speaks... A little bit to how the refs are going to call it. I think some of those penalties were a little ticky-tack.
Yeah.
But the way Russia plays, I think, is conducive to drawing penalties. Because they love to carry the puck. They never dump it.
Which I love.
Which, I mean, yo, yeah, it's great. And that's why it's such a watchable game. And, like, I think that lends itself to drawing penalties.
I'm kind of curious. This is a slight tangent, but do you think that it's Bobrovsky's net to lose?
I mean, after that game,
now it is.
He's going to get the next game.
Yeah.
But I think we talked about this in our Russia preview that I don't think they're going to hesitate to change goalies because they really want to win this. But yeah, I thought at times Russia was a victim of its own talent. Like, they probably should... There were times where I think they could just dumb down their game a little bit. Like, there was one play where basically Datsyuk was streaking it across and he could have just shot it on net.
Are you trying to get it across to Kucherov?
Yeah, so he had a winger driving to the net, taking a defenseman with him, and he tried floating like a saucer to him, right? To just like hit him right in front of the net.
Yeah.
And it's a good idea if you can pull it off, but the easier play is probably just to shoot it at the goalie's pads and let the winger driving just slam home the rebound.
Hopefully, yeah.
Right? I mean, like, there were instances like that a couple of times where I thought, like, you know, you could probably just shoot it at the net. Like, I think that's kind of the beauty of the way Canada plays, is they can play that finesse game, but they sort of gravitate towards the simpler aspects.
Right.
I mean, that's basically what happened in the first U.S.-Canada game when Pavelski scored. Right,
oh, yeah.
Right, Pavelski?
Yeah. It was just a shot on net.
Yeah, barely crossed the blue line, dump it on net. There was no way that it was going in, but it was a rebound.
Yeah.
And Pavelski...
He just beat Bergeron to the net.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's the old adage, go to the net and good things happen.
Mm.
Like... Yeah, but...
which I'm a big believer in.
Oh, yeah.
Because it works.
It's just math. Like, you know, you go to the net, you're going to be exposed to more rebounds, more opportunities. Mm-hmm. But as far as Russia goes, man, like, if they can look that good against Canada, I believe that they can go far.
Yeah.
We'll see. Now, let's talk about Canada a little bit. They look like a beast of a team.
Yeah.
Mm. Like, I know, me especially, I had some doubts about them. And I still have them to some degree. I still don't think their blue line looks particularly impressive. Shea Weber, okay. Man, we got our obligatory Shea Weber moment out of the way early.
That's 12 in a row.
No, but he honestly has not impressed me in the slightest in this tournament. Like, he doesn't look like he belongs out there.
Yeah,
and I know that's a scorching take, but I think it's valid.
I think there was a play, I think it was in the Russia game, where he was just going to the corner, and his go-to play there to try and get the puck out was to level a big hit in the corner. And then, you know, hopefully take the puck or someone else come in and take the puck and get it out of the zone. And he missed. and the play just stayed in the zone, and suddenly he's out of position, and they're scrambling.
Did he play with Vlasic again in this game?
I just think he looks confused. I've said this before. He looks confused when he breaks the puck out.
Mm.
Like, he waits too long. He doesn't have the timing down. He waits so long to pass it, and when he does, the guy he's passing it to is already covered because the back checkers they have time to read the play and sort of just cover their guys. So it ends up just being a chip off the wall, might even turn into an icing. Like, honestly, if the argument, and I've heard this argument a lot, especially on Twitter, is that he's an elite defenseman, I have seen absolutely nothing to lead me to believe that. And, like, sure, he has a big slap shot on the power play. Whatever.
Yeah.
Honestly, whatever. Like, they don't even use him on the power play right now.
I kind of wonder what they're going to do, because they have him and Vlasic, and we talked about this a little bit on the last podcast of, are those guys, between them, are they going to be able to get the puck out of the zone? Because Vlasic is a guy he's going to make the smart play. He's not going to mess it up, but he's not like a bona fide puck mover like the Carlsons of the world.
And the play you typically see Vlasic make is, you know, gets the puck down low and then short chip to basically the half boards and then the pass out of the zone.
Yeah. So, but then you have Shea Weber
can't do that.
Like you've been talking about, he's struggling to break the puck out. And so it kind of got me thinking about zone starts. Like, do you think maybe they'll try and insulate Weber and...
No.
Well, just let me finish this. Do you think they'll maybe try and get him out there in offensive zone starts as much as they can? Because that's where you want him anyway with the big slap shot. But then the thing with Vlasic is you want him out there for the defensive zone starts because he's so good in his own end. So, like, it just seems like they've got the... It seems like... not a great mix, you know?
But see, my thing is, to answer your question, I think they believe that Weber is a shutdown defenseman.
Yeah.
That's why I don't see them trying to shelter him at all.
Yeah, and that's a problem, you're right.
Like, I think they truly believe, and hockey people believe, that he is this shutdown guy. And he is not. I'm sorry, he's just not. Like, still a serviceable player, but he looks outclassed in this tournament.
Yeah. You see all the gifts of him leveling guys, and it's just like, oh.
Or just punching guys in the face. Yeah.
Oh, he must be great in his own end, but...
Yeah. And those things have value. It's just, they don't lend themselves... They don't really help that much in the bigger picture.
And it's just a snippet of the entire game and everything that he's out there to do. Like, there's more than just that.
Yeah.
So.
But before we go too far down the rabbit hole of Shea Weber...
Yeah.
Again.
Because I think that really takes away from Canada. Like, Canada looks fantastic.
Yeah,
Carey Price looks like he's back in control.
Oh, man.
After the...
Wait, do you disagree?
No, I do not disagree.
Okay. But I was just curious.
Go on.
Well, Nick. Felix and I were texting very early in the morning, last night / this morning, about what Linda Cohn was saying, where she said that last time she checked...
And this was on the Puck Soup podcast.
This was on the Puck Soup podcast.
Shout out to the Puck Soup podcast, by the way.
We're big fans of that show. But she was saying that... She said two things that stood out to me. She said... One, if Carey Price is the starter for Canada, they have no chance to win the tournament because she thinks he's not ready after the injury. And then,
go ahead.
Like, one, I disagree with it because even though he looked a little rusty in the first game, there's more games. And he's a great goaltender. So, like, it's not going to take that long.
And
like,
one of the more athletic goaltenders.
Yeah, so he's going to be fine. The second thing that she said was that... she said that last time she checked, Carey Price is not the best goaltender in the world. It's Jonathan Quick.
Well, that looked so two things. First, she's an ESPN anchor.
Right.
Which leads me to believe, I don't know that much about this woman.
She's a goalie, though.
Is she?
She plays. She is.
Yeah.
Well, goalies can be wrong, too, about other goalies.
Hey, goalies are notoriously in their own little world.
The thing is, look, I was a goalie for a long time.
Yep.
And I like to think that I was pretty well versed in the position.
Oh, yeah.
But just because you're a goalie and you understand goaltending doesn't always mean you understand who's the best in the league. Because sometimes, especially I remember when I was playing goalie a lot, I remember you sort of fixate yourself on sort of the visual eye test level stuff. Like, how is this goalie playing? How do they look? And look, I think that certainly has value. Like, you have to sort of understand what leads a goaltender to getting success or a lack of success. But I think now that I've sort of stepped away from playing goalie a bit, and I've sort of veered more towards like writing and, you know, looking at the numbers and stuff, you sort of get a better sense of the bigger picture. And for her, A, to say that Carey Price won't be good because he's been injured sort of tells me that that's a very surface level comment.
Yeah.
Leads me to believe a little bit that she probably doesn't pay that much attention. And B, to say that last time she checked, Jonathan Quick is the best goalie in the NHL or whatever.
In the world,
sorry.
Last time she checked was 2011.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. It was 2012.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not even going to give that any...
Yeah, and
she's just wrong. And the funny thing is, like, it's not even me saying that. Like, anyone can go Google NHL save percentage, and you will not find Jonathan Quick near the top. So,
like, he alternates between good, not great, good save percentage.
To average.
Yeah.
To even below average.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this isn't, like, us, like, doing the Comedy Central roast of Linda Cohn. Like, we're not, like, taking a shot at her. It's just that we don't agree with what she said.
No, and it's, look, it's not even that we don't agree. Well,
it's just that it's factually inaccurate based on, like, statistics.
Yeah, like, the first point of the injury is a bit more debatable. But the second point of Quick is just, like, objectively wrong.
Yeah, like, the point about the injury, like we said, in that first game that he played, like, he looked rusty. There were rebounds. That goal that Patrick Kane scored on the short side should not have gone in. Yeah. But then the game against Russia, he allowed only two goals. He had that brilliant save off of Alex Ovechkin where he moved from left to right. And, like you said, the knee looked fine on that one.
Yeah.
So I'm not worried about Carey Price.
And it's interesting because, you know, there's always the, like, there's comparisons in sports across everything. And, you know, in hockey with goalies, you know, you can actually sort of legitimately compare these two because they're both very athletic goalies.
Yeah.
And, you know, Carey Price won the MVP. Jonathan Quick's won a couple Stanley Cups. You know, they've both been...
And a Conn Smythe.
Yeah. Yeah, they've both sort of been at the pinnacle of success. And, you know, it is a valid point that Carey Price, this is the first action he's seen in a year.
Yeah.
Almost.
Like 10 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is a bit of a valid point. And he did look rusty
in
the game against the U.S. But like, if you compare just the way they, again, the eye test, the way they look in the net, Carey Price, you know, very compact, always in position, never really scrambling, but, you know, because he's very athletic like Jonathan Quick, he can make those highlight reel saves and game-saving saves. You look at Jonathan Quick, he relies on his athleticism, and there were multiple times in the U.S.-Finland game where, you know, he was way out of position and sort of got tangled up with his defenseman, and because he was out of position and could not get across to the other post where the play had either gone behind the net or to the other point. But because, you know, his teammates sort of bailed him out, the shot never came to the net and he didn't have to be there, but he was not going to be there.
Absolutely. And like, I totally agree with everything you guys are saying. And I guess just to put a bow in this Jonathan Quick thing, like, look, I don't blame the guy for not really changing his style.
It works for him.
It's working. I mean,
it's gotten him it's gotten him two Stanley Cups.
Yeah. Joe Sutter's gotten two Stanley Cups.
Yeah. But, you know, like, in his mind, the way he's played has absolutely been the reason why for his success. I don't think, I think part of that also is other people believe that as well. And I think the people he surrounds himself with that are training him in the summers probably see it the same way. Like, I don't think they're probably of the mind, especially as a trainer who, you know, if you're a goalie coach, you're getting paid by the player. So, you know, you kind of have to play a bit to that player's... Like, you're not going to tell the player, look, you're doing everything wrong.
Yeah.
Let me just change how you play. You're a Stanley Cup winning goaltender. You know, like, that's a tough sell for a goalie coach. I don't think he's ever had someone tell him in the last 5 years, look, I really think your game could use an overhaul. Because if, if you think about his athleticism, he should be athletic enough to play a very conservative style and be good at it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he, I will say this about Jonathan Quick, he has some of the best reflexes I've seen of any athlete.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, that is something that he's good at. The only thing is, all he's got to do is find a way to use that a little less. And I think he's capable of it.
Yeah. I kind of wonder if maybe his size has something to do with it, because he's not one of the bigger goaltenders.
But it's like, make yourself big. You know, that's that's the old adage for goaltending.
Yeah.
Make yourself look big in net. But all right. We've talked ad nauseum about Jonathan Quick, and this certainly won't be the last time we talk about him.
John Quick.
Yeah. You know, little throwback Thursday action, since it is technically Thursday night. Actually, it might be Friday morning.
It's now Friday morning.
Yes.
12:33 a.m.
Here on the West Coast. When Jonathan Quick was a prospect coming up in the Kings system, if you like looked up his name or like in hockey magazines, it would say John Quick. That's why we say John Quick, like jokingly.
Yes.
Because we've been paying attention.
We're trying to bring it back.
Yeah. But anyway, back to Canada, back to the World Cup. Look, I honestly think Canada... Look, I had my doubts about them, still have them, as far as the blue line goes. But Price looks as good as he's ever looked. And those forwards, man. Like, I cannot get over it. The talent. And they all seem to know how to play together. That Bergeron, Crosby,
Marchand.
Yeah, that's like, a good line. They are in... Like, did you guys see Bergeron's backhander?
I did not.
Not yet.
Oh, man. So,
but I will.
So it was awesome, because I don't know if you guys are... Well, I'm sure anyone who's listening right now has... Or most people have watched or did watch the Stanley Cup final last season. And it reminded me of that assist that Crosby got in, I think, game one. Skating down the left wing.
Yeah.
You guys certainly remember it.
Yeah.
It was the same kind of play, and he just dumps it off to Bergeron, who's cutting down the middle. Bergeron gets it on his forehand. He's a righty. Goes to his backhand quickly and just roofs it. Like, it just went straight in and out of the net.
Yeah.
Like the back bar.
Yeah. Who would have thought two really great smart players have chemistry together?
Yeah. But but yeah, I mean, seriously, there's not a player in Canada who hasn't impressed me so far. Like, they all look really good.
Yeah. Do you think that's a good point to jump into our first question? Yes. From Twitter?
So, thank you to everyone who submitted questions. We went to you today on Facebook and Twitter to get a little ammo for our podcast, for tonight's podcast. So let's get into our first question. I think, like you were saying, it goes pretty well with this conversation.
Yeah, this one plays right into what we're talking about. This comes from Danielle on Twitter at Queen D. And Danielle asks...
The Queen.
How do you guys feel about Ryan O'Reilly replacing Tyler Seguin? And who would you have picked instead?
Well...
I know you guys have thoughts about this.
Well... Anyone who's looked at my Twitter in the last week knows how I feel about it.
Yes.
I would have picked Taylor Hall, personally.
Yeah, I would have too.
Obligatory. I mean, you cannot replace a guy like Tyler Seguin. It's just impossible.
Yeah. Okay, now that we have that out of the way.
All right, go on.
No, but Taylor Hall, to me, is at this point almost underrated, like, by hockey people. But is it really that? Like, you know what's funny about Team Canada when we discuss their player selection? The guy who traded Taylor Hall is the GM of this team, or is one of the heads of the team, Peter Chiarelli. Oh, no, actually, wow, I'm wrong. He's the head of Team North America.
Yes.
Sorry.
You're right.
Full apologies. But, you know, like, Mark Bergevin is part of the leadership team of this team.
So the point still kind of stands.
And P.K. Subban isn't on the team, right? But look, Taylor Hall has this weird reputation for whatever reason. I think just because he was the best player on a bad team for a long time.
Yeah.
People sort of think he can't win or whatever, which is totally unfair and ludicrous.
But now he's in New Jersey and still probably going to stick around with him.
Yeah, I know. That's the worst thing. But he would have been my pick, because I think if this Canada team could use anything, it might be a little bit more speed.
Mm.
And I think Taylor Hall might be one of the like three fastest guys in the NHL.
But Ryan O'Reilly, he's not a pedestrian out there.
He's
also very fast.
And that's where I was going to go with this, is like Taylor Hall would have been my pick, but Ryan O'Reilly is by no means a bad pick. Like, he is a legitimately good top six forward in the NHL.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I agree with you. I would have picked Taylor Hall because I think he's just more explosive. But Ryan O'Reilly, it's not like he just walked in off the street. He I think he was in the All-Star game last year.
Yeah, no, so, like he's like, a great player.
Like he's a really great deserving player. He's going to do really well for them.
Yeah.
Canada had a few options. They had O'Reilly, they had Hall, they had Gallagher.
Yeah, Gallagher is another guy I would have looked at because I think he's a capable scorer.
Yeah.
But
It's interesting how many snubs they've started off as for this team, and it's slowly dwindled down where everyone is like kind of getting their shot now.
Well, I mean, it's just because we've all seen now this team play for a few games and we realize like, oh yeah, they're really good.
Yeah.
It kind of doesn't matter who they pick unless it's on defense, and then it's a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, but thumbs up for Ryan O'Reilly. Joe, you got any takes on Ryan O'Reilly?
I mean, you see Ryan O'Reilly's name on the score sheet a lot when it comes to, you know, not just goals, but like you see him assisting a lot. And I feel like replacing Tyler Seguin, they went with Ryan O'Reilly. They went with, you know, they brought in speed. You know, they didn't lose that much speed there. And, you know, Tyler Seguin, for his playmaking ability, you know, not just, you know, passing, but, you know, shooting, you know, they, you know, got someone who's competent at dishing off the puck.
Yeah, that's a thing that is interesting, is they replaced a 40-goal scorer with a guy that's more of a passer.
Yeah.
Not saying that O'Reilly can't score, because he had, I think, almost 20 goals last year.
I think that was kind of the logic with Ryan O'Reilly. He's kind of like a plug-in-and-play type player.
Yeah.
Where you can just kind of put him in there, and he's kind of like a conduit. You know, like, he's going to get the puck, make the right play, and not really take up too much space, you know.
And he can play up and down that lineup, too, because he's known as a very...
he's versatile.
Yeah, he's versatile. He's known as a guy that is smart. You know, he doesn't take a lot of penalties. He can probably kill penalties for them.
And he's damn skilled. Yeah. Like, the guy's got some hands.
Yeah.
And he can shoot.
Yeah, like, he's for real. So this was, like, even though he wasn't our pick, he's still getting thumbs up from all of us.
Yeah. So, Danielle, thank you for the question.
Very good question. Shout out.
I think it was it needed to be asked.
Yes.
And answered.
Yes.
Which we did. So, let's move on a little bit. We got some really good questions on Facebook. I'm going to keep it a little bit in the World Cup theme.
Bring it on.
This one's from a buddy of mine, Stephen Hurley. Joe Pavelski, Captain America. Hockey Hall of Fame or nah?
That's such an interesting question.
I think it deserves to be asked.
It does.
I'm gonna throw this one at you guys because I feel like you're potentially in a better... You've seen more Joe Pavelski games than I have, being Sharks fans.
Yeah, I mean, I think this kind of goes without saying, but if his career ended today, he would not be a Hall of Famer. Because you think about what is common among Hall of Famers, 400, 500 goals?
At least 400.
Joe Pavelski is sitting on, I think 266 at age 32, I believe.
Yes.
Yes, yeah, age 32. So he has a ways to go. I think he's on his way if he keeps, you know, if he has a few more 35, 38 goal seasons like he's been doing the past few years, then, you know, he's on his way. I can see it happening, but it's a matter of keeping up that pace.
Yeah,
it's hard to keep up that pace in today's NHL. I'm almost kind of surprised that he's still scoring that many goals.
I mean, Pavelski is an interesting case because, you know, you look at him and he doesn't exactly, like, you look at the way he moves out there, and then, you know, he goes to the tough areas, so you would expect him to sort of get beat up a lot, and the way he moves, you would think he's already not playing with an advantage.
Yeah, because he's already not that fast. He's not an amazing skater. The thing that sets him apart from everyone else is he's smart, he has good hands, and he's got a lethally accurate shot.
Yeah, and
yes,
the comparison you can make on his own team is Logan Couture. You know, they're another sort of unorthodox style player, you know, also very skilled, but I think Pavelski's big advantage over a guy like Couture is his longevity. Like, Pavelski, especially a couple of years ago, was very okay with taking hits. Like, he got laid out a lot, and he always got up, and he hardly ever misses games.
And part of that is just luck.
Yeah,
you know, so, like, I mean, part of having a long career is just kind of luck. Like, yeah, just avoiding hits. Like, I mean, avoiding injuries, you know?
So if he can, like, maintain what he's doing and his ability to stay in the lineup, even taking, you know, big hits might support that, that he might be able to stay in his prime a little bit longer, you know, maybe to like 36, maybe,
especially if
maybe not in his prime, but
especially if he keeps playing with Joe Thornton.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to ask you guys one question. When did he start playing with Joe Thornton?
This year?
No, just
in general.
When were they put together?
Was it like 3 years ago?
Because
I think last year was their second year playing together.
What's really interesting about Joe Pavelski's career path is he's consistently, throughout his 20s and now into his early 30s, has improved as a shooter. His shooting percentage has been in an upward trend pretty much the entire way through.
Oh my God, he shot 70% last year.
17.
Yeah, 17.
Yeah, and he didn't hit 30 goals until he was 27, which is kind of an interesting thing to think that now, especially the way prime sort of work, it's more between like, you know, 22 to 26.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't hit 30 goals till he was 27, didn't hit 40 goals till he was 29. And now that he's at 30 and 31, he's hit 37 and 38, all shooting at a pretty high rate above 10%. Last year shot 17%, like you just said, 14.2 the year before. So something in his game, I think, has like something shifted in his ecosystem, the like the line he's on, the style he's playing, whatever it is, he's dramatically taken a step forward as a goal scorer.
Yeah, because he was a little bit of a late bloomer. He came up from the minors in his early 20s, like 23 or 24 or something.
Yeah, and he's always gotten pretty good amount of ice time. Like ever since his 24-year-old season, well, the season in which he was 24, he's gotten pretty much 19 minutes of ice time every season.
I mean, he's an interesting case. He's a guy like, again, Couture, and then a guy like Datsyuk, where not a lot of hat tricks. Like, he didn't start getting hat tricks, even though he scored, you know, 31 goals in 2011-2012. He didn't have a hat trick before then. I think he got his first hat trick in 2013-2014, which is his eighth season.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And then they just started coming.
I don't think he's a natural goal scorer. I don't think he's like, you know, I don't know, like a Taylor Hall or an Ovechkin. Well, like, just not one of those naturally born goal scorers, just born to put the puck in the net.
He plays around the net.
Well, that's the thing.
So I think that's his biggest advantage.
And I think that a lot of this stuff is reflected in sort of more like his underlying numbers. Like, ever since, basically, he was like 25, the last 8 years or so, he's never been a negative player in like relative shot attempts.
Yeah.
Which, to unpack that sentence, means that since he's been about 25, 24, every time he's out there, the Sharks outshot attempt the other team. Like, they are usually in the other team's zone, which is a really good sign.
Yeah.
So he's always had that really solid 5-on-5 game, and he's very useful in special teams. Look, I think Joe Pavelski, to answer the question, I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. Because it's not even that I don't think he's a very good player, which he obviously is. Look, if you were to ask me, who would I rather have next season, Joe Pavelski or Jonathan Toews, I would think about that. I would legitimately think about that question. Mm-hmm. It's not so clear cut that Jonathan Toews is this like demigod as some Chicago fans would have it.
Yeah.
But I just, if you look at what it takes to get into the Hall of Fame, you need individual awards.
Yeah, you need rings.
You need rings. Well, rings, yes, but you definitely need some like Art Ross's, some Selke, like you need, you know, hardware, and he just doesn't have any, and he's only made the All-Star game what, like once or twice.
Yeah, but the Olympics happened like twice in that time
span. But the thing is, like, all those things, he's done a lot of great things in this league. Like, I think he's one of the better players we've seen in the last 5 years, and I think part of the reason why he doesn't get the play he sort of does is because he plays for the San Jose Sharks. Look, if this guy was playing in Chicago, an American-born player, oh my God,
everyone would love him.
He'd be like the next
He would be Captain America.
Like, he would be just, you know, hailed.
Yeah.
Even if, like, you know, put him in a big market, right? But yeah. San Jose, even though it's one of the largest, or at least most populated cities in America, just is not a big hockey market. And so he doesn't get the sort of attention that he probably deserves. I think he's a very good player, one of the best we've seen in the last few years. But if you look at what it takes to make the Hall of Fame, just not going to make it.
So, something which is not grounded in facts or anything at all. It's just purely speculative.
Okay. The Don Cherry segment of this podcast.
Right? Hold on, let me get my blazer. Sorry, putting your sunglasses.
All right.
The big comparison when Pavelski first came up, you know, was to Joe Thornton. One, automatically because...
Little Joe.
Because they're both named Joe. There's one.
There's kind of, yeah.
Another thing, you know, not grounded. But, you know, their playing style, they were
both, I mean, that is factual, by the way.
They were both very good passers.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, that was the huge reason why Pavelski was nicknamed Little Joe, because there was already Big Joe.
Jumbo Joe.
Jumbo Joe. if... And like I said, this is not grounded in anything. If the comparison is warranted at all to Joe Thornton, and you're looking at what Joe Thornton has done...
I mean, Joe Thornton's a Hall of Famer.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All he's doing when he gains points is moving past Hall of Famers. But if you look at what Joe Thornton's done in his late 30s now, and if the comparison is warranted to Thornton at all, then maybe Pavelski has a chance.
But it's not.
But like, I think it is still an outside chance.
I mean, yeah, he's not making the Hall of Fame. Like, I hate to say it because I actually like his game, but it's...
Yeah.
It's not... I mean, like, come on.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I can see it happening, but I'm not putting money on it. Like, I would...
He's not first ballot. Like, that's...
Oh, no.
Yeah, like, it would take years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I kind of put him in, like, the class of, like, a Guy Carboneau. Like, Guy Carboneau was a very good player in the NHL. You know, did he win a Selkie? I'm not sure. But, you know, won two Stanley Cups, one in Montreal in 93 and in Dallas in 98-99. Like, had a very good career, is known as one of the better defensive centers in NHL history. Actually, might have won a cup in 86 as well. But, like, the point stands that he had a very good career, still hasn't made the Hall of Fame, you know? So, like, one of the better players of his era. But the way the Hall of Fame works is they put a lot of weight on, like, awards
mm-hmm.
and, you know, like, just kind of arbitrary benchmarks, like 500 goals and stuff like that. So, for that reason, I can't see Joe Pavelski making it. But, like, do I think there's a case to be made? Like, sure, if you just look at quality of player.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
He would just have to keep tearing it up for a long time. And since he was such a late bloomer.
Yeah.
I will say this. I think he will make the USA Hockey Hall of Fame.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. All right.
And that's where we move to the next question.
You know what? Joe Pavelski doesn't need your charity.
All right. So Steven has another really good question, which hits a little closer to home for me. So I'm just going to read it. Canada loves hockey, and they as a country deserve the respect they get. But aren't the French Canadians kind of coasting on the rest of the country? I mean, the Q is easily the worst of the major juniors. With the World Cup of Hockey going on, we got to talk what a purely French Canadian team would look like. You think it's going to be better than the Czechs? You take Bergeron and Vlasic off the national team. You know, I think they have enough depth to recover and still be a favorite. Talking about Canada. I think this needs to be discussed. 90% joking. Please don't use my name if you do. I just find this thought funny. Well, this thought is actually funny in that it's interesting, and we're going to use your name, and I don't think you were joking because you put a lot of thought.
This
is like a legitimate question.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
I love it.
So, full disclosure. I'm born in Montreal. My family is French-Canadian. That is my heritage. That is my culture. So this one, I'm a Canadians fan. Like this hits a little close to home for me, and I've thought about this a lot, obviously because the province of Quebec has tried in the past to separate from Canada and become its own country. Like, this is a thing. And it's rooted in, you know, historical stuff, which we don't really... We're not the Garage History Podcast.
Or the Garage Politics Podcast.
Yeah, but... What would a team purely made up of French-Canadian players look like? And there's some interesting names that are currently active. I'm just going to go through a few. Alex Tanguay, Mike Ribeiro, Patrice Bergeron. Here's the thing. And this is... I'm going to go... So these players I'm listing right now are all born in Quebec.
Yeah.
Now, French-Canadian isn't separate, but it's a larger umbrella over Quebec. It just means a French-speaking person in Canada, where French is your mother tongue.
Yeah, and, you know, Giroux is, even though it's a French-Canadian name, it's just, he just has the name because that's where his family came
Claude
from.
Giroux is a Francophone player. Like, French is his first language, but he's from Ontario.
Yeah. Oh, really?
He's from Hearst, Ontario, which is, like, a known town. Like, it's a town in Ontario that's known for being mainly French-speaking. So there are a lot of communities in, you know, the eastern part of Ontario that are mainly French-speaking.
And that's why Giroux has the accent when you hear him
speak.
Yeah,
like, okay. He speaks French, and, like...
But because he wasn't born in Quebec.
But he's not born in Quebec, so
he's not qualified.
He's not on this list, right? But he is, and like Brad Marchand falls in the same category where he's French-Canadian. French is his first language, but he's from New Brunswick, right? Because the maritime regions have a lot of French speakers, the Acadians. And those are the people who eventually moved over to Louisiana.
So with those islands, if Quebec separated from Canada, would the islands stay Canadian or would they be...
Well, that's the thing. So Quebec is its own province.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just trying to separate as a province. So there's the province of New Brunswick, the province of Prince Edward Island, Nova Scotia. They're their own provinces. So no, they wouldn't go with it.
Okay.
But maybe, and like, they're also very poor. So they benefit from Canada's redistribution of like taxes.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to this team that we're trying to talk about. This is good. I think some listeners might get some value out of understanding.
I know I've learned something. This is good.
Antoine Vermette, Pascal Dupuis, Alexander Burrows.
Oh, Dupuis is no longer on that list.
Yeah. I mean, is he officially retired?
Yeah, he is.
Okay. Chris Letang.
Yeah.
Would be a really good defenseman for that team.
Yeah.
Would be a really good defenseman for Team Canada.
Yeah. Oh.
What?
Oh, wait.
Might be better than Shea Weber. I don't know.
Oh, you don't say.
Derek Brassard, David Perron, P.A. Parenteau, Francois Beauchemin, David Dernay, you got Marc-Edouard Vlasic, obviously.
Jonathan Huberdeau.
Mathieu Perreault. Jason Demers would count. Torrey Mitchell. Anthony Duclair, Simon Dupré, Jonathan Drouin, Cedric Paquette, even Jonathan Marchessault.
Yeah.
And then in net, obviously, that's where Quebec would shine.
Marc-Andre Fleury.
You know, Roberto Luongo, Fleury.
Corey Crawford.
Crawford, yeah. Crawford, and some people might not know, but Crawford is actually from Montreal.
Yeah.
He's an English speaker from Montreal.
Yeah.
That would still count.
He's like Torrey Mitchell. Like, based on listening to them speak and looking at their names, you would never guess that they were French Canadian.
But so to answer Stephen's question, and I think it's really an interesting topic, there has been historically a bias against French Canadian players, like in terms of drafting, because in Canada, there's always been a stereotype that the French player is just like soft.
Really?
Or tend to be softer, or tend to be, you know, like whatever you want to call it. There's always been that sort of inherent bias against them from the English speakers, because there's always been that rivalry between the two. And so there have been studies done that, like, to make it in the NHL as a French Canadian player, you need to like actually be really good, because Quebec is actually like 25% of Canada's population.
Mm.
So you would think there would be more French Canadians in the pool of Canadian players that are in the NHL, but there really aren't.
So they're 25% of Canada's population, the players that make it to the NHL is less than 25%.
Yeah, exactly. And Canadian players are like half of the NHL.
Yeah.
Or whatever. So it's kind of weird that there aren't more French Canadian players. And, you know, to his question about the QMJHL being the worst league, I don't really know if that's true. Like, I mean, what is that really based on?
Yeah, I don't know. I would have to look more into that.
I think a lot of that is based off of, oh, well, how many guys make it to the NHL?
Probably.
Because they don't have, the juniors don't have their own tournament where the leagues play each other, right?
Well, they do. It's the Memorial Cup.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. And the team that's hosting automatically makes it. But it's a good question. And I think, I guess, to sort of get at the other point is like, would this team be good? I think they would be a competitive team. Like, if you look at those forwards, and even the blue line would be respectable.
Yeah. Like, I would have to look at those players more closely, but just gut reaction, I don't think they would be the worst team in the tournament.
Oh, they would be better than Czech Republic.
Yeah.
They would be better than Team Europe. They would be better than... They would definitely be at least on the same level as Finland, in my mind.
Yeah.
Especially if you factor in goaltending. Because, look, Finland... You know, we're not so sure about their goaltending
anymore. Ever since Kaprizov retired.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
he was so good.
Yeah. It sounds like they might give it to Rene, which I think is weird over Rask, but whatever. Yeah,
but so Quebec, or the French-Canadian team, whatever you want to call them, if you include all French-Canadian players, so if you throw in Giroux and Marchand, like, they would be a really good team.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
And... Yeah, so it would be really interesting. I think that's a really fun question.
Yeah, I kind of wish we had time to piece together four lines and 3D pairs, but that, yeah, would, I know. That would take more time. But
oh, and don't forget Marc Barberio, who's also French-Canadian, who is from Quebec, who's also like a very good depth defenseman on the Habs right now.
Mm. But so. You know, like looking at, you know, that sort of roster, it's not like dividing Canada right down the middle where you suddenly have two really good
all-star teams. No, not at all, because I mean, so many good players in Canada come from the west, you know, the western part of Canada, and I mean the largest portion come from like Ontario,
yeah,
you know, like around Toronto. But this team would compete. Like, I think this would not be a pushover by any means. And don't forget Marco Scandella, also born in Quebec,
yeah,
is a good young defenseman for the Wild. So yeah, I think that's our take.
Yeah, I think we covered that well. I think they'd be a good team.
I mean, just the sheer fact that they have Chris Letang.
Yeah.
And even, you know, and even Dupre and Demers are like pretty good.
Yeah.
You know?
And like you said, they're kind of stacked in goal.
Oh, like, they are stacked.
They're really good.
Like Luongo is still, you know, maybe a top 10 goaltender in the NHL.
Yeah.
I would take him, yeah.
Yeah. And then up front, they got speed, skill. So. Yeah.
I mean, a team with Bergeron. Like,
yeah, but sign me up. But even depth guys. Oh, quote-unquote depth, you know, like Parenteau. And then you have, you know, your young guys like Duclair. Huberdeau, and then...
Matthew Perreault.
And then Drouin, and even younger guys like, you know, the third overall pick this past summer, Pierre-Luc Dubois for the Columbus Blue Jackets would also be a very good forward.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Team Quebec, make it happen. Yeah. I would buy all the apparel.
You would.
Man. No, I would seriously be all in. That would be pretty awesome.
It would be fun to see that team. It'd be fun to see those jerseys, man. Those would be beauties.
I feel like they would resemble the Nordiques jerseys.
They would probably exactly. But you know what? That's a good thing.
It would be good, yes. Okay.
Man, Paul Stastny and Jason Pominville, I didn't realize.
Yeah, well, actually, that's a little... So this list is a little inaccurate in that sense, because Jason Pominville is born in Quebec, is born a Canadian citizen, but is now an American citizen.
Oh, okay.
You know, yeah, he even has his own town.
Yeah. You can add one. This impression is going to get cut out, so I'm not even going to do it.
And then, who's the other guy I mentioned?
Stastny.
Stastny plays for Team USA.
Plays for Team USA.
Yeah, but his dad, Peter Stastny, played for the Nordiques.
Yeah.
So he was technically born there.
And he was a...
All the Stastnys did, right?
Yeah. Marion and Anton.
And
yeah,
they were defects from the Czech Republic?
Or was it the Soviet Union?
The Soviet Union.
Yeah. Czechoslovakia.
Czechoslovakia.
Yeah.
More history for you guys.
So it's been a really good history lesson. But anyway, that was a really good question. Honestly, man, if you can come up with more questions like that, you're going to keep us busy this whole season.
Keep us honest.
Yeah. Hold us to it.
That's kind of our motto.
All right. So this one's going to be a little bit more, let's say...
Off the wall? Off the board?
No. It's going to be a little easier to answer, I think. Are the Sharks going to win it all this year? This one's from Brian Chung, who actually works for the Sharks. So he has a vested interest in our question, or in our answer. Are the Sharks going to win it all?
On an earlier podcast, I believe I said that they would.
Things have been said.
But even though that's what I want to happen, and I think it could, I don't really think it's going to happen.
Lukewarm Nick.
They're not going to win.
He's back.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. I said they will not win at all. Period. You know what? Seven periods.
They'll break their previous record of least games won in a season.
Just the mere threat of a lukewarm Nick has Nick in it. He's rattled right now.
I'm rattled. I'm embattled. You know what? Felix, you are keeping me. You're holding me to it. That's what you're doing. I appreciate you.
But honestly, that's the funny thing is like,
good friends do this for each other.
No. But the funny thing is that we mistake lukewarmness. Like we think it's a bad thing, but you give a very measured response. Like you think it's certainly possible, but I don't see it happen. Like that's a very
like you're firmly on the fence.
Well, no. But... that's reasonable. Like if they won the cup, would I be surprised? Yeah, because they've never won it. But when you look at their team, no, it would not be surprising if they won.
Like analysts have been picking for the past decade.
Yeah. See, I was trying to give you a little credit there, and now you're kind of like snatching it back from me.
Well, no, because I'm just saying everything that I've been saying. Like,
okay, look. I think my takeaway, three takeaways from Nick Berger's take on the San Jose Sharks.
If you can even call it a take.
My latest. I think, look, I agree with most of what you're saying. I think the Sharks certainly, I think the biggest thing for me is the Sharks haven't lost anything, and they've only added. They added Mikhail Bodker. They lost Roman Polak, which is actually an addition.
They turned him into David Schlemko.
David Schlemko and Dylan DeMello are certainly going to perhaps, at least in DeMello's case, perhaps play bigger parts in this team's, you know, just in this team's long-term success.
It's going to force Brandon Dillon to play better.
We'll see how well Timo Meier, if he cracks the lineup.
Timo Meier, Martin Jones is young and might still improve.
Yeah.
If he stays the same, then that's a good thing for the Sharks. I think that the biggest question mark for me with the Sharks is, you know, what's going to happen with some of their older players? Like, are we going to start seeing Joe Thornton finally, you know, showing his age a little bit? From what I've seen from him in this World Cup so far, it doesn't seem like he's slowing down at all.
Yeah.
But, you know, a World Cup and an 82-game season are much different. And, you know, I don't want to say I'm worried about Patrick Marleau, but I think he's already shown signs of slowing down. And I think this might be the year where that starts becoming more apparent.
Slowing down might not be the right phrase, but, like, decreasing in...
Just, like, his production
impact.
Yeah, because you're right about that. Because he is still very fast.
He's still a useful player.
Yeah, still upper echelon fast. But in the game today, you need to be able to create your own space. You need to be creative with your hands. He's a very straight-ahead player, which isn't a bad thing.
No, yeah, it's good.
But he doesn't really create his own space.
No, not as much.
I think the lack of creativity is kind of what's slowing down his production.
I think we saw... where his game is going, I think we saw that transition being made in the second half of last season, where he was more of the third line center, penalty kill type of guy, but still used on the first unit because of his speed.
And they have that first unit just has so much chemistry.
It's just that at this point in his career, is he willing to start sort of scaling back his role in this team? Like, that's really what it comes down to. Because as an older player, you know, sometimes you just don't want to be the guy who's kind of scratching for that ice time, or, you know, at least not getting the top flat ice time that you've always been used to. You know, some guys they're just like, you know, I don't have to do this. You know, I'm out.
Especially since, you know, he scored 25 goals last year, so it's not like he had a...
Yeah.
It's down by his standards, but it was a rebound year from the year before when he had 19.
Yeah, so it just seems like he's not trending, you know. But I think with the Sharks, though, one thing that does keep me optimistic, or at least... gives me hope, is that, you know, like you were saying, Timo Meier, potentially an Anton Goldobin. We don't know what the future holds
Nikolai.
For him. Nikolai. Did I say Anton?
Yeah.
What did I say?
You're still thinking about the Stastnys, right?
I'm still thinking about Anton Khudobin. I think that's where that's coming from. Yeah, but Nikolai Goldobin, Timo Meier, even Jonas Donskoy, who was only 24 last season. Yeah.
Donskoy and Chris Tierney.
Yeah, I think that they have some young guys who, if they can take the next step and perhaps take a little pressure off of, and even Pavelski is not that young anymore. He's going to be he is 32.
Yeah.
I would say that my concern with the Sharks is age going to be a factor, but I feel like part of that is mitigated by their youth. And then the overriding factor for me, which is probably gives me the most confidence that they can do it again, is the fact that the Pacific Division is considerably weaker than the Central.
Yes.
Yeah.
They don't have to do much to finish first. You know, LA is still going to be a good team, but I think the Sharks can definitely beat them in a 7-game series. The Ducks,
and they did.
The Ducks were not even sure if they make the playoffs, although, you know, they certainly are still capable. And then, you know, Calgary, Edmonton, like, they're nice, they're interesting, but no one is really getting the sense that they're shoo-ins for the playoffs. So I think the Sharks kind of have... I don't want to say what.
You forgot Vancouver.
No, like, Vancouver's terrible.
No, like, it wasn't even worth mentioning.
I know, that's why.
No, Vancouver doesn't belong laughing in this conversation. And then, you know, Arizona, sure. Okay.
Yeah, Felix.
My apologies to the people in Arizona and Vancouver. I don't care about your team, sorry. But, back to San Jose, a team that matters. Look, the Pacific Division is weak. The Sharks are going to have an easy road to the conference final. They can easily make it to the conference final unscathed. Look, let's say they... I think the biggest obstacle to them would be who makes the wild card.
Mm-hmm.
Because those two wild card spots could be really good central teams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe, like, we had the same debate at the end of last season before we had a podcast.
Finishing second might be advantageous.
Yes. Finishing second might be advantageous. So we'll see. But I think the Sharks have a path back to the Stanley Cup final. As long as they can sort of keep pace in the regular season, stay healthy. I think health is going to be so important for this team. they will definitely be right back there.
They definitely will. My big thing is I just think there are too many teams that are better.
Better?
Like, well, I'm saying like Pittsburgh. Oh, like, you know, the Central Division.
Well, to be fair to Brian's question, he did ask, can they win it all?
Can they win it all?
Okay.
Yeah, so, okay. And that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I mean, the way they got just kind of thoroughly beat by Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and...
I think they can, though. I don't think it's out of the question. I just think if I were to... Look, I'll give you a concrete answer, Brian. If I were to bet on it, I would say no.
Same. I'm saying no.
Like, if my money were to talk for me, I would say no.
I mean, the biggest thing I'm going to be looking for from them in the regular season this year is... Can they build on the swagger and confidence that they showed in the first three rounds?
Yeah.
And even you know, in not just rolling over to Pittsburgh.
I mean, they didn't roll over.
No, they didn't, but they could have. Like, you know, like the first three games were one goal games, and they were down 2-1 after those first three games. And, you know, they still managed to scratch out another one, even though, you know, Pittsburgh beat them sort of thoroughly in that fourth game. But if they can keep building on the confidence they had at the end of last season and, you know, play like, you know, we're legitimate. That's our cup. You know, we want it. We want to prove to everyone. I think, you know, they'll be a better team than they were last year, even without the new additions to the roster.
I honestly think that's a great point. Cause you know, obviously at least for me, I look a lot at the stats and the trends, but I think there is this thing that's going to affect the stats that's going to drive them upward. It's just the fact that they want it.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're pissed that they lost last year. I think Joe Thornton, guys, you know, Marlowe, Pavel, like they thought they had that cup. Like that was theirs to win. I don't think they ever looked at the Penguins as a team like, oh, we're the underdogs. You know, there was no team that was ever going to come out of the East where the Sharks were going to be clear-cut underdogs. Yeah. At least that's what we thought at the time.
I don't know if
Pittsburgh was really good.
I don't know if they looked at Pittsburgh and thought we're the underdogs or not the underdogs. I think the big thing is that they were just so damn good for three rounds. It was like, who's going to stop us?
Yeah, I'm just a little worried that, I don't want to say that that was an aberration, but like I was saying earlier, like, do they have the legs to do it again?
Yeah.
Because it's tough to get back there 2 years in a row. Like, there's that basic reality that, you know, going 3-4 rounds deep 2 years in a row in the National Hockey League is a really tough ask for any team.
And that's why you don't see teams repeat these days. Like,
yeah, or even repeat finals.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that doesn't even happen.
Like, Tampa, you know, getting back to the conference final this season.
And was, almost winning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's sort of an accomplishment.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so, Brian, to answer your question, I think my definitive answer would be, I think they can. I don't think it will happen.
Yeah. Ooh, look at you sounding like me over there.
Well, I mean, to be fair... Oh, okay, actually, let me reread his question. Are the Sharks going to win it all?
Yeah,
I'm going to say no. I don't think they're going to win it all.
You know, I hate the role of the contrarian, but because I'm a Sharks fan, I'm going to take it. I'm going, yes, they're going to win it all.
Winnipeg. Anyway, let's move on. All right.
You know, but...
Chicago's not making the playoffs.
Ooh.
Possibly, very possibly.
Dude.
In that division, very possibly.
That's such a great division.
They're not one of the great teams.
Maybe. But what a great division.
I'm saying it because this is our podcast. We created it. I'm not answering anyone. Chicago is not one of the best teams in Central Division.
Now turn off your Twitter notifications.
No, like anyone who's listening.
No, I mean, because I think you might have retweeted.
They're bad. No, in a bit.
Okay, I'm just going to leave now.
Hey, you guys wanted hot takes. I got them for you.
Here's a hot take. Chicago will lead the league in too many men penalties.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Not a hot take.
That's a weird take. But anyway, but certainly more on the side of hot.
Yes. Anyway.
What were you saying? Yeah. Let's just quickly address the Central Division thing. I don't think they're one of the best teams in the Central Division anymore. Honestly.
Yeah.
I'm being honest.
They're a really good team.
They're a good team.
But they've kind of been victims to the salary cap and all that. Been hard to keep core guys around. It's great that they still have...
No, it's been hard to keep depth guys around. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah, you're actually right.
Because they kept their core guys. They kept them all.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Because Kane, Taves, Seabrook, Keith, Hossa, they're all still there. Crawford.
And they lucked out with Panarin. Like, let's be honest.
Oh, yeah, they did. Yeah, they absolutely and that, did. And
I honestly think that's the only thing that kept them relevant last year.
And they're trying to do it again this year.
With Kempney?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I still believe in their talent, because how can you not? I just think that that's the only thing they have left. Like, I think something in Quenneville's systems is starting to erode, because you saw it. And, like, the numbers are bearing it out. They're below 50% now in scoring chances for percentage every game.
Which is very surprising.
Teams are outchancing them. Yeah. Like, for all the hype that Chicago gets, they're getting outchanced. They're getting outshot attempted. Like, that is not the mark, let alone, that's not the mark of a great team. That's not even the mark of a good team.
Yeah. A big part of that is the decor, because it's still really only four.
Oh, they bleed shot attempts.
Yeah, they really only have four defensemen, maybe five.
Like 3.5?
Yeah, like...
I would argue 3.5.
Yeah, I would say so. Because talking about the depth guys, even last year they still had pretty good depth players. Thomas Fleischmann is really good.
But they didn't play him. And then Dale Weiss, they didn't play him either.
Yeah, and he had his best year ever last year.
Yeah. So anyway.
Their bigger problem, I think, is the defense.
They had a great year from Kane. Yeah. They had a great year from Corey Crawford. And if they don't get either of those two or just one of those two, they, like, struggle.
I would think Corey Crawford's the bigger one.
Yeah, because he's never been as good as he was last year.
Yeah.
So I think this season still falls on his shoulders a little bit, which is so weird to think that Chicago will now be... Their hopes are sort of riding on their goaltender. Like, to think that they're reduced to that.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what needs they address during the season.
I want us to drive this train. Like, I really want us to, like when it happens, look, I want us to be like, we told you.
Look, so. Chicago sucks and we called it, okay? Deal with it.
I do have to say that the game that Corey Crawford played...
looked good.
Yeah, he looked very good.
But he looked good in one game.
Yeah.
The problem is, if you want to win a Stanley Cup, you got to play, like, 100 games. Well, as a team.
Yeah.
The goaltender plays, like, I don't know.
Not that many.
Yeah. Anyway, now that we've given... I think we've made up for all the lukewarm takes with our, like, Chicago is not going to be good
take.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're bad.
Do we want to get... Okay, so we got one last question. Jordan Moore asks, who are some lesser-known hockey players that deserve more attention? Lesser-known. So I think when you think of this question and answering it, you have to think more... from the lens of someone who might not pay attention as much to the sport, or, you know, maybe just like a fan of the sport, but maybe just more casual.
Guys that maybe aren't household names, but are in the hockey community, really great.
I think one guy who is very good, who doesn't get enough attention, is like Max Pacioretty.
Yes.
Like, because I think he's one of the very best goal scorers in the league, one of the very best at driving possession, but just has never really gotten... Like, he's never been, like, just a superstar.
Yeah.
Like, no one really puts him in that category, which is weird because you see the guys that get put in that category are, like, the Jonathan Taves, you know, guys who probably aren't as good as Max Pacioretty.
Yeah.
You know? So, I would probably say Max. And Jordan, to answer your question, Max Pacioretty is, like, a 30 to 40 goal scorer pretty much every year.
Yeah.
Shoots a ton of pucks at the net. Does things that contribute to goals, and goals win games.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting, that comparison to Taves, because when you put it in that light, personality comes to mind, because Ovechkin, yeah, he's great with skill, but he's also got the personality to go along with it. When you look at Pacioretty and Taves, it's not like Taves gets all this attention for his personality.
Well, he's Mr. Serious, or Captain Serious.
Yeah, which is like that's a really great way to put spin on saying that he's boring.
I mean, like, Pacioretty's the same way.
Exactly.
Listen to Pacioretty's, like, post-game comments, and they're never interesting.
Yeah.
Well, actually, last season he was pretty candid, because he was just so frustrated with the team.
Yeah.
But in general, he's...
In terms of personality, his monotone, like, rivals Stallone.
Yeah.
Joe, I think you have someone.
I do have someone.
Okay.
The guy that you see constantly on the score sheet for this team, for Ottawa, and... who is also undervalued. Like, he's very serviceable in fantasy also. Kyle Turris.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
Ever since he got traded from... Like, he did, you know, well in Phoenix. It was then Phoenix.
It was then Phoenix. Yes.
And when he went to Ottawa, you know, he's sort of a driving force behind the offense. Like, he's not the centerpiece.
Yeah.
But he's in all the action. he sort of drives, maybe not drives the chances, but you know, he plays, you know, on those on the top two lines, and he complements their star players very well.
Yeah.
And last season, he was injured. He had only played 57 games, so his points suffered. But the previous 2 years, he had 58 and 64 points.
Yeah. No, useful player. I like Kyle Turris. And a quick little factoid about Kyle Turris. This will be my Pierre Maguire moment of the podcast.
Oh, yay.
Went straight from the BCHL to the NHL.
Really?
Which is actually kind of remarkable, considering I think he was one of the... might have been the first guy to ever do it. The BCHL is a junior A league. Actually, might have been a major junior league, but has never been looked at on the same level as, you know, the WHL, the OHL, or the QMJHL.
Right.
So, at the time when he went straight from the BCHL to the NHL, it was like a really big deal because it was a less established league.
Do you know his parents' names or like what underwear he wore?
Okay, right. I guess this isn't the Pierre Maguire moment of the podcast.
Yeah, you didn't take this down a creepy road.
I didn't give you his blood type. Yeah. So.
Oh man, because we all wanted to know so badly.
Nick, do you you know we got some love for Pierre Maguire.
Keep talking about Pierre Maguire while I look at my my underrated player.
Yeah, but I like your Kyle Turris pick. I was gonna bring up, man, another Hab, Brendan Gallagher.
I mean,
I think he's underrated by like a lot of people.
That's
like,
fair.
That's because people don't like him.
That's because people are dumb. No, but he has done things to like be disliked, but they've never been on the same level to me as like a Brad Marchand, who does things that can legitimately hurt other players. I think Gallagher is just like a pest. Like, he's just annoying, but he's not...
just wait for it.
He's not evil.
Right.
All right, who you got?
I've got Philip Forsberg.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I think he's kind of become a household name among hockey fans.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
But
yeah.
Among maybe the casual fan or someone that isn't a hockey fan at all and only knows Crosby and Ovechkin, he's not a name that you should know. But he scores some beautiful goals all the time.
Yeah. He's a lethal shooter.
That roof shot he had on Martin Jones in the playoffs.
Yeah.
This guy's legit. I don't know.
Absolutely.
I've got nothing more to say about him. He's just great.
It's the worst move the Capitals possibly have ever made.
Yeah, George McPhee.
That was bad.
Although,
let's give the background on that.
So, was it the 2013-14 season? It might have been. You guys look it up while I go on this tangent, or not tangent, but I'm explaining. The Washington Capitals traded Philip Forsberg, then a prospect, for Martin Erat and a draft pick, I believe. And they were trading for Erat as an attempt to make the playoffs, while, you know, they thought, okay, we can mortgage our future just to like get this last ditch playoff spot. And a lot of that was because George McPhee sort of was hearing the footsteps and knew that his job was in jeopardy, so he had to do something. And it turned out that they made the playoffs, they didn't, or they like, you know, got bounced early, but it didn't work out. Martin Erat like is no longer in the NHL, wasn't very good for them. While Philip Forsberg has gone on to become just like an outstanding goal scorer for the Nashville Predators. So that's the background.
The other player in that trade was Michael Lotta. Yeah. So not redeeming
just
at
like,
all.
Just not, not a...
This is 2013.
2013? Okay.
Just a bad move.
A bad move.
It was just bad.
A very short-sighted move. A very like save my job move.
Yeah.
And I think that's how like we should really evaluate trades is like, you know, what's the implication here? Like, what's the status of this GM's tenure in this city? Like, is he just trying to save his job? Is he rebuilding? Like, I think we always have to really think about the context when we think about trades. Because I can't blame George McPhee for just trying to save his job. Like, just trying to, you know, because if you make the playoffs, you get another season, you know?
Yeah.
And as a human being, I think that that's a very rational thing.
Yeah, because you think about it, teams have 5-year plans. Like, they want to build teams that are going to be great for a long time. Yeah. But if you don't win right now, you're not going to last.
Yeah. And there have been discussions about, well, is tanking just a way to keep your job for a while? You know, it's like, oh yeah, we're on this track to one day be good. Just trust me. You know, it's like the Philadelphia 76ers in the NBA. But at some point, you know,
they're still in the NBA.
owners get impatient, you know, like the money has to come in, wins have to, like, wins drive ticket sales, drive, you know, revenue. So yeah, I can't blame GMs for acting the way they do sometimes. I think sometimes though you really like have to force yourself to think about the bigger picture.
Yeah.
And you never know, because like Ted Leonsis has been known, the owner of the Capitals, to be more hands-on. Yeah. So maybe he had a part to play in that.
Yeah.
Who knows?
And it's just hard to, I know it's hard for fans. We know it's hard to look at the bigger picture sometimes, especially when things are not going well.
Yeah.
But sometimes you have to try and think, okay, in their shoes,
yeah,
I get it.
Yeah, but sometimes that only goes so far. All right, how much time we got?
Hour 10.
We're at an hour 10.
An hour 10 minutes. So this is one of our longest podcasts. So I think that wraps it up. Do you guys want to talk about anything else?
Oh, can we get to that one question?
Okay, so we have one more question.
People will enjoy this.
From Austin Logie, a friend of the show. How does Cap smell? And now we're going to preface this by, today I was at work at Whole Foods, and my coworker comes running to me and he's like, hey, Colin Kaepernick is here. And for those who don't know, Colin Kaepernick is the quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers.
Backup quarterback.
He played in the first game. Anyway.
Yeah, at okay. the very end.
He will start some games this season.
Oh, yeah, I have no doubt.
But he was there, and I was like, okay, well, this is crazy. I need to get a picture with him. Like, I need to, like, you know.
Call me, maybe.
Yeah, and then I run over there. I see him. He's with my coworker, and then my coworker gets done chatting him up. I'm like, dude, like, my phone is dead. Can I use your phone? Like, come on. He's like, can you take a picture for us? I was like, dude, just take my phone. Like, take a selfie. I'm like, oh, like, I hate taking selfies. Like, they're so corny, you know? But he's like, just take it. Like, he didn't want to take it for me. And I was like, all right, fine. I'll just give me your phone. And then I go in the aisle where I thought he was at, and he's not there anymore. And I turn around and he's in the other aisle. I'm like, oh my God, like, there's Colin Kaepernick. Like,
larger than life.
Like, he's actually in front of me. So I'm like, hey, Colin, can I get a picture? Yeah, like, just like some sappy fan. I'm like, whatever. He's like, yeah, sure. And I'm like, all right. And then we take the picture. You know, he's super cool about it. And I'm like, hey, man, like, respect what you're doing. Like, you know, really appreciate you taking the time to take a picture and blah, blah. I'm just like babbling. Like, I'm like a fanboy, you know? And he's like, oh, man, like, appreciate it, you know? Because, like, I just told him, you know, respect. Like, and he said, like, I appreciate it as if I had told him, like, nice watch or something. It was, like, no biggie.
Did he have a nice watch?
You know, he didn't have a watch on.
Oh, man.
The guy's really tall, by the way.
I mean...
And, like, muscular. And, like, you know, like, he has, like, no fat on his body.
Yeah. Like, looking at the picture, because I saw it while I was at work, and he's, like, I mean, he towers.
Yeah, yeah.
He towers over
but
people.
But he seems like a legitimately nice guy.
Yeah. He looked happy to be taking that picture. Like,
yeah.
A lot of guys... You know, you'll see celebrities take a picture, but they look like they can't wait to get out of that picture. So, but he looked pretty cool.
Hey, so shout out to Colin Kaepernick, officially a friend of the Garage Hockey Podcast.
He is.
And by the way, I was at the game on Monday night here at Levi's Stadium, which is a walking distance from my house, which is a walking distance from the studio.
Yes.
I was at the game, 49ers-Rams. 49ers beat up on the Rams. That was awesome.
That was the kind of game that made me happy and sad, because I'm happy as a 49ers fan.
The Rams suck.
Well, it made me happy as a 49ers fan that the Niners won. It made me sad as a fantasy football player that has the Rams defense.
Oh, I have them too. Whatever.
Yeah.
It's fine.
But you know what? You and I also have Matt Forte in our respective leagues.
Yes.
So we feel good.
Yes. So shout out to Colin Kaepernick for taking a picture with me. I'm super stoked.
Yeah.
90
plus likes on Instagram. Right,
yeah, so it was awesome. Good podcast, guys. I think we talked a lot about, like, a lot of things.
We talked about history. We talked about
Canadian politics.
Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah. So good pod, guys. Nick, you know what to do.
Dismiss the class.
Dismiss. Yeah. Get us out of class. We can go to recess.
Guys, the bell rang. Just go. Anyway. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Garage Hockey Podcast. You can find us on iTunes and on Stitcher. We hope that you'll leave a nice review for us on iTunes. We have 3 5-star reviews.
Hey, shout out to everyone who's leaving reviews. Seriously, it does not go unnoticed or unappreciated. 3 reviews so far, everyone leaving kind words, especially about the production of the show, which is a nod to Nick and Joe. You guys are the ones, Joe, you're manning, you know, the board, Nick, editing after we record. shout out to you guys. Shout out to people leaving reviews. It seriously is fantastic. And, you know, if anything, just makes us feel like what we're doing is, you know, worthwhile.
Yeah, it's fun knowing that we're not the only people that are enjoying this, that other people are getting on board as well. So thank you for that. The nice ratings help us move up the charts on iTunes so more people will find us more easily and hopefully enjoy us as well. So thank you for that. If you want to join the conversation, interact with us on Twitter, you can do that. Tweet us at Garage Hockey Pod. You go to that profile, you'll also see our individual Twitter accounts, so you can hit us up there. So until next time, thanks for listening.